Everybody, how we doing? Lunch is almost here. It's almost lunchtime. I'm sure there's something delicious out there for us. But we've got one more session before lunch. I'm really excited about this one. I want to introduce Dave Bruno from Aptos. He's going to talk about effective, tenacious deal enablement programs. How many of you know what a deal enablement program is? That's why they're here. So it's all you.
All right. I was young and an actress.
Audio, check.
When you knelt by my mattress and asked
for awesome. Okay, thanks for coming, you guys. As Matt said, I'm Dave Bruno. I'm the one of the marketing directors at a software company called Aptos, which we'll get into in a couple of minutes. But before I start, I wanted to ask you guys one simple question about deal enablement. You don't have to answer out loud. You don't have to raise your hands. But the question I want to ask you is, how long has it been? Right? How long has it been since you've been a fly on the wall in a sales meeting? Inside the boardroom in that all-important meeting, when's the last time you were in the boardroom? Was it 3 months ago? Was it 6 months ago? Was it a year ago? If the answer is yes, if it's been more than a couple of months, you're at risk, your brand is at risk, your message is at risk, and you're frankly flying blind into the darkness. So that's what I'm here to talk to you about for the next half hour or so. How to avoid death by PowerPoint inside the deal. How deal enablement at my company helped us avert the messaging breakdowns that often happen once you get that meeting, right? And you know the meeting. It's the meeting. Your coach is there, the influencers are there, the deciders are there. It's the meeting where you have your opportunity to prove your mettle to the prospect. And to get this meeting, you've run a textbook campaign. And right up to the meeting, things are proceeding swimmingly well. And right after the meeting, right, salespeople, what do you ask them how it went? It was awesome, right? Awesome. Couldn't have gone better, Dave. To a person, the meeting went great. And for weeks afterward, what do we hear? Right? Crickets. We hear nothing. What the hell happened to that deal guy? I don't know, Dave. Everything went great. It was a great meeting. I don't know why they don't want to buy our system. But we haven't heard from them. Radio silence. Don't we love those words? Oh, they're radio silence. They've gone dark. We don't know what happened to them. So if that story sounds familiar to you, you've probably fallen into what I like to call the black hole of content marketing. And I call it the black hole because people don't talk about it. They don't talk about what we talk about in front of the customers when we're inside that meeting. We don't talk about it as content. It doesn't get managed. It doesn't get measured. Marketing doesn't get involved because it's not content. It's a black hole of poorly prepared sales presentations. Guys, I've been doing this for 25 years, and I've been fighting the good fight against these poorly prepared, God, can't say that, can I? Poorly prepared sales presentations for my entire career. And for most of that time, I've gone it alone, trying to make a deal, trying to make an impact on our ability to influence the deal and pull the companies that I work for out of that black hole. And I was able to do it. I built a lot of my career on my ability to help pull salespeople out of that black hole. But to do it, it was exhausting. I'm constantly burning the candle at both ends. And too many times, my day-to-day life felt like I was pushing a big rock right up a big hill to try to move the needle inside of these deals. But 2 years ago, almost to the day, in February of 2015, I didn't know it then, but things were about to change for me. You see, my good friend and former manager pictured here, Nicole Crow, called me. She had recently started working at a billion-dollar ERP company called Epicor. Spoiler alert, you'll see Epicor here in a couple of minutes. She had called me and said, Dave, come join me. Help me run marketing for a small retail software division inside the big company that is Epicor, because we have a chance to do things differently. What we didn't know, what neither one of us knew at that time, is how different we would be able to do things. Because not 3 months after I started, the board spun our division off from Epicor, and we launched as Aptos, a brand new company, in June of 2015. And the story I'm going to tell it to you today is the story of Aptos and how we embraced new ideas and new processes around the beast that is deal enablement. So four bullets, really fast, our background. Retail technology, think e-commerce platforms, think point-of-sale platforms, merchandising platforms. We sell to mid to large-size retail chains, Coach, Tumi, True Religion, Michael Kors, Tory Burch, companies like that are our customers. Our average selling cycles, give or take 6 months, give or take $750,000, and an average selling price, ASP, and our targets are mostly the C-suite, sometimes SVPs and VPs as well. But there's sort of a picture of who we try to reach and who we try to target with our marketing programs. So we launched the brand. Our first challenge is to build demand. So Nicole and I and a slowly growing team, we'll talk about in a minute, we dug in. We did what the thought leaders like Demand Gen Report and Pragmatic Marketing and Serious Decisions told us to do. We identified our personas. As much as I hate personas, we did it. We identified our personas. We carefully mapped our customer journeys. We created detailed content maps. And along the way, we invested heavily in creating an expansive content library. We have an engaging and converting website. We have an active and converting blog. We have a diverse, not necessarily converting, but growing social presence. We have a big collection of high-impact thought leadership assets. Many thanks to Content for Demand, some of the people I see in the room here today for helping us develop that library. We've got a great collection of collateral at the product level. We even have assets that represent and reflect our deep commitment to our community, including an entire standalone brand called Commerce of Caring, which talks about people and doing amazing things for kids in the community. And yes, for the first time in my career, I had what I consider to be a truly comprehensive collection of professional presentation assets. We had hundreds and hundreds of slides so that any salesperson at any time could hit that library and create a deck at the corporate level, at the solution level, at the industry level, or anything in between or all of the above. And as you might expect, as Demand Gen Report would tell us to expect, fairly quickly our pipeline began to grow. And we had enough content, we were confident that we had enough content to nurture those leads throughout the entire funnel. Or maybe we were too confident. Because very quickly, we saw too many opportunities getting squeezed in the funnel. Dollars coming in, coins coming out on the other side of the funnel. And we were frustrated, right? Like, what's going on? We did everything right. We checked all the boxes. Why are these deals not closing? When we looked into it, we found two suspects. Okay? And these suspects might surprise you. But the first suspect was the airline industry. The second suspect was Gogo in-flight Wi-Fi. Because you see, our salespeople spend, on average, about 60,000 miles a year. They travel 60,000 miles a year in the air. And most salespeople will tell you airplanes are great times to get work done. It's quiet time. My phone's not ringing. I think airplanes are a great time to get things done. But what we learned was happening, which may or may not surprise you guys, is that they're using all that airplane time to take my beautiful slides, work my fingers to the bone to personalize the presentations. Right? Oh, Dave, we learned a lot in discovery. We have to take what we learned and we have to apply it to these beautiful slides that you gave us. Okay? It's a great idea. I like that. The problem is they were doing it on the airplane on the way to the meeting, not in advance. Not preparing, not practicing, on the way to the meeting in the airplane. And we all know that doing work on an airplane, there's plenty of room to spread out and be productive. There's rarely any distractions or things to break your focus or your concentration on the task at hand. And things like this just never happen, right? It just never happens. And I got to tell you guys, some of you I hope are old enough to get this reference. If not, I'll just be embarrassed. But I feel like Charlie Brown. Right? Because the sales team, after all my years and all the investment I just made and all those good slides, they had done it to me again. And I felt like Charlie Brown running after that football and having Lucy pull it out for me at the last minute. Okay? And all of my slides, our slides, all of the work that we had done as a team quickly had dissolved into what I call slides of shame. And when we asked the salespeople to send us the decks and show us what they're putting in front of the customers, this is the first slide I saw. Okay. Man, those are some big logos. Those are some big, distorted, stretched, obnoxious logos of customers that are using our system. It may not even, actually, it doesn't look that bad on the big screen, I'm surprised, but some of them are low res, clearly just hijacked off the internet. Some of them aren't up to date. And we all know how people love when you disrespect their brands. But other than that, in general, the slide's not so bad, right? It's on brand, it's a high-resolution image, and even though the logos are reasonably obnoxious, they're not covering up the people's faces, so you could say composition, I'll give you a B-. So I was like, okay, maybe the slides aren't the problem. Maybe this isn't the problem, or if it is the problem, maybe it's not as big as I was afraid it might be. But you guys know this, right? The problem with bad slides, they're like weeds. Once you have one, they start popping up everywhere. Turns out I had a forest of dandelions. I just didn't know it. Like this beauty, right? First of all, Vince Vaughn, if you all know the Vince Vaughn stock image, right? This is like right out of Vince Vaughn stock image hell, right? Cliche, stock image, everything moving benefits. Second of all, you can't read the words. Third of all, there are 82 words. I counted them. There are 82 words on this slide. And guys, this was the closing slide. Look at the headline if you can even read it. Reviewing the benefits. Here's why you should buy my system. Now stare at it real hard and ignore me while I talk and you try to read why you should buy my system. And I'll check back in a few minutes and see what you think if you should buy my system. Or this guy, right? I mean, really, somebody actually got it in their head instead of landscape mode, let's go to portrait mode for these slides. And everything along with it got stretched. And I particularly, besides the low-res imagery, besides everything being scrunched, I love how they broke the words and the numbers, right? Look at countries there in the middle. And the devices, 143,00 plus, whatever that number means. I mean, we intuitively know what it means, but they let this go. I was proud of them, though, that they got all those plus signs in there, because those are important, right? Those are important to us. Or this guy, okay? Remember, spoiler alert, we'll come back to that in a second. So where do I start? Do I start with the Christmas tree font, right? Do I start with the awkward grammar? Because we are both not the same company. It's at least awkward, if not grammatically incorrect. Or do I start with the stellar messaging, like if we have the best point of sale solution with the best business practices, right? So when I asked the salesperson, I said, Terry, what the hell? What exactly were you thinking when you put this slide together? And she says, but Dave, look, you're a branding guy. Look at the logo. Aren't you happy about that logo? I said, yeah, Terry, I guess if I have to give you something, the problem is it's on an Epicor template. So you get a fail even on that, right? Branding fail on top of everything else that failed. Or this guy, because we all love the metaphor. We all love those arcane, obnoxious metaphors because my system is like a used Mustang. So if you want to spend $750,000 with me, think about spending $8,000 on a used Mustang because that's a good metaphor for me. It's a very effective way to sell my software. And if you look at those ridiculous pictures in the middle, like really what does a point of sale system, you know, collects cash in the stores, right, a cash register system, what that has to do with the interior of a used Mustang, I still to this day don't know and the salesperson couldn't tell me, right? What our audit system has to do with the stereo system, the only thing I can come up with is audit sounds like audio. So maybe that's good. Or maybe I could be happy with the 1997 cell phone picture that they chose to represent how well we communicate and interface with other systems. But she still got a fail because it was on a freaking Epicor template. And by the way, she couldn't even be bothered to retype the name of the company. She went ahead and kept Epicor right in the text on the slide, okay? And finally, like, really, like, what fresh clip art hell is this? Really, like, this is 2017, guys, and this slide was in front of a customer of mine not 6 months ago, okay? So, take a breath. It's so exhausting looking at those slides. I can't, every time I look at them, I get upset. So, What's the problem? The biggest problem with bad slides, I think, is probably intuitive and self-evident. But even the best speakers, right? And regardless of what you, we could argue about politics all day long, but I think few people would argue that Barack Obama is probably one of the greatest presenters of the last decade or so. He's an excellent public speaker. And we have bad slides, you guys. Even the best speakers in the world are going to struggle to overcome bad content, right? So it was clear, right? Our value message was getting lost or ignored, and now I knew why. I knew why we were struggling to close all those deals. And clearly it was time to shake things up a bit. So Nicole, my friend who hired me, said, you know, we're a new company, maybe we can teach this company some new tricks. So we set up a test lab to answer one simple question. Could we create a scalable, repeatable, and effective deal enablement program that we could sustain? Very simple to express, not necessarily so simple to execute. But to execute it, the first thing we knew we had to do is we had to convince the sales team they needed to change course. Some of you, I think, raised your hands in the last session that said you are salespeople in here. If you are, you probably are familiar with what I'm going to say, that you're creatures of habit, that you find routines that work for you, and when you close deals, you like to stick to those routines. And I've often known a lot of salespeople who actually get superstitious about those routines and don't like to break them. So convincing them that working on PowerPoint presentations, on content, on airplanes, maybe not such a good idea. The problem is, how do I convince them that it's a good idea? And going negative, right, punishing them, making them promise not to make bad slides, it's probably not the right approach. I just needed this clear, unambiguous argument that says, come with me, come to the dark side, and get better with your presentations. And I landed on one that was amazingly effective. It's three simple words. I said, you guys, we got to change because we aren't Apple. We are not Apple. Okay, maybe four words without the contraction. Because for all but a very few companies like Apple, clear product differentiation is really tough. We didn't invent the iPod or the iPad or the iPhone. We have good retail software, but so does Oracle and SAP. Some of them are in the room probably. Salesforce, right? We have lots of companies who kind of talk about doing the same kind of things that we do. And if you Google one of the things that we do, you're going to get pages and pages of companies that kind of do what we do. So clear and undeniable differentiation is very difficult when you're talking products, but when you're talking PowerPoint, when you're talking presentations, that's a whole different ballgame. And the salespeople's eyes lit up at this notion that they could differentiate from their competition without having to get product management involved, without needing an R&D budget, without having to do a roadmap presentation. They simply needed to invest in themselves, invest in their skills as presenters, invest in their skills as storytellers, and invest in their ability to turn those stories into effective PowerPoint presentations. And that last point was the clincher, you guys, because, geez, right? Bad slides are everywhere. Bad presentations are everywhere. And they're in our deals. They're in your deals. So they got it. We convinced them they needed to change. Next, we needed to show them what good could look like. So we wanted to find the right deal. We wanted to find that one deal that would really make the case that says this is why you need to change behaviors. So we went on a hunt to find that one deal that would stick out because it was winnable, it affected a broad mix of our products, it was high visibility within our organization, and we had an influential salesperson assigned to the deal. So we found a home furnishings retailer, home decor, home furnishings, and we said, you know what? Let's invest in this. This met all the boxes, and it had the bonus that their CEO was friends with our CEO. So can't get much better visibility than that. So we got to work telling the story of how our solutions can change the customer journey for this retailer. We identified a customer, we gave her a project, we gave her a journey, we described the journey, we gave her a mission to furnish her daughter's bedroom together. We assigned a salesperson and reflected discovery into the solutions that the salesperson sees on their screen. And we gave it a happy ending because, right, who doesn't love a happy ending? So that's a super fast flyby, but you can sort of see right? The outcome of this, of telling the story, of embedding our solution into the customer journey, the CEO went crazy. The salespeople went crazy. We moved the needle in the deal, and throughout Aptos, the reviews were consistent. 5-star reviews. We had hit a home run. It went viral, and soon requests for help started coming in from everywhere. So we needed to scale the process, right? Okay, check. Got them to believe. Check. Showed them what good could look like. So how do we scale the process? 3 ways, okay? First of all, it's better tools, believe it or not. After all the work we invested in giving them tools and assets, we realized we had to do it again and get better. Better training and prioritization. So tools. We built a PowerPoint template that has 40 live sample slides in it. Not just a, here's a bullet slide, here's a section divider slide, here's a title slide. Here are real live slides. Change the words, change the imagery if you need to. Cut and paste, you got live slides. 40 slides in the template. 50 icons, so clip art from hell hopefully never has to cross my desk again. 50 icons customized and prepared in the deck. 700 images and counting in our image database that are tagged, searchable, cataloged, sized, and compressed for PowerPoint use, so you drop copy the image and drop it right into a slide. In-depth presentation training, how to build better slides, how to handle imagery, how to tell stories, how to put those stories to work in effective PowerPoint slides, how to use data judiciously so we don't see 14 bars, a screen grab of a bar chart with 14 bars on it. They only want to talk about the bottom one and the top one, but I have to paddle through all 14 bars. Just tell me the two that you care about. How to craft better headlines on your slides that move the message forward. And we gave them tips and tools for how to practice and the importance of practicing what they preached. And then step number 3, the scalability, is prioritizing. And this is pretty much my only acronym, I think, in the whole deck. We put ABM best practice to work to prioritize. We named our top, in our case, is about 230 accounts. Those are the accounts where marketing will invest. The rest of the deals, you're on your own. Use the tools, use the training, come to us for advice, but you got to handle it on your own. So, is it working? Let's take a quick flyby at what we've seen in the field. Because I'll tell you what, you guys. When people saw what good could look like, good slides spread like wildfire. Our standards raised. It became almost a competition. People didn't want the pre-sales people that were on somebody else's deal who had good slides to see their bad slides, right? Word quickly spread, and in deal after deal, people began raising the bar. Even in deals where their existing clients, where the inclination is maybe I can get lazy because they already know me and they love me and they have my products, even though they want to buy something else, maybe I don't have to invest so much. Here's an example of a ski apparel retailer. Took our core standard deck, updated it with beautiful high-resolution imagery of well-composed slides with this young lady and her snowboard. And then we got to metaphors, except these are good metaphors, right? We talk about disconnected enterprises and look at her skis, right? We look at flawless execution. It takes flawless execution to pull off that move on the snowboard, right? Suddenly metaphors were meaningful and memorable and even a little bit humorous, right? We saw decks where people began to define a clear vision. A children's apparel retailer where we talked about a customer, except the customer's now 6-year-old Brittany who's got a birthday coming up. And her aunt, might she look familiar, reusing and repurposing. Here's the same stock model from the other deck, right? Browsing Brittany's wish list, making an order. We talk about how our solution helps the store make sure the order is ready on time. And again, with the happy ending, Cassie maintains her status as Brittany's favorite aunt. And the salesperson even took it a next step further to clearly define how that solution can enable that vision for that customer's journey for that retailer CEO. I love this one. Quickly, a running apparel and shoe retailer, about 600 stores throughout the states. And I love this one because the salesperson is an avid runner. So she was going to sell to a running store retailer, a running shoe, running apparel retailer. She embedded herself right into the presentation. That's Katie right there. She took pictures of herself. She told her own personal story. She talked about her shopping profile, how many shoes she buys, how much money she spends on running clothes, and where she shops. And to her great credit, in my opinion, she had the courage to say, I can't name the prospect, but that prospect is not in that list of people who get that share of her wallet. She had the courage to say that, and then she gave him a roadmap to getting into her wallet by becoming her training partner. And she got to know their market and said, you know what, if you do that, if you get into my wallet, there's 30 more million Katies out there like me. And then we told the story. We helped her. We told the story of how you need to get connected, get to know your customer, and before long, you'll help them reach their personal winner circle. And if you do that together, you'll reach your winner circle as a brand. And then finally, I have an example here of how people really began to get creative. This is with an RV camping-type retailer. They sell all the stuff for your rig. I don't have a rig, but I know rig is the right word, and I want it to kind of sound cool for those of you who might have RVs. So everything to outfit your rig. And as you might imagine, if you're a camping RV retailer, there's lots of journeys that might be possible in your relationship with your customer. Certainly, you have the shopping journeys, without question, right? And the shopping journeys continue to expand. And these are live slides right out of the presentation. Stores, web, mobile, social. There are journeys with the brand. The brand experience over the life of that customer. And of course, there are actual journeys, right? They're driving their rigs around the country. If we had the opportunity, Mr. Retailer, Mrs. Retailer, if we had the opportunity to track that, imagine the potential. And this won't translate. I want to share it with you anyway, just from up here. The salesperson actually put together sample marketing pieces for what the retailer might send to their customers. And again, some of you are too young to remember what accordion maps were like. You remember the old days when you have a map and you unfold it, you could never get it folded back. So they built maps and said, what if we hearkened back to the nostalgic days when we didn't have GPSs? And we built a profile, pardon me, it's upside down. We built on the front, on the cover of every map, a customer profile of our journey together with this particular customer, grabbed pictures off of their social profile. Forgive me while I do this. Some of you have no idea what I'm doing right now. Carly, I know. You have no idea what I'm doing. But took a map, right, and mapped out that customer's journey across the country with the brand, gave them badges, and recognized them for their consistency and their loyalty to the brand. Talk about going over the top, right? This is content. This is account-based marketing without a piece of software attached to it. It's just good processes and creativity putting those things together. So, as you might imagine, things began to improve. Win rates went up, margins went up, time to decision went down, cost of sales went down. We just needed to maintain the momentum, right? We were winning. Things were going well. How do we continue to be successful? So the first thing we needed to do was we needed to invest our time and our energy deeper into the funnel. Right? Yes, we have software and we have tools and we have, you know, ABM and things that help us automate things into the funnel, but we needed to invest our time, personal time, in helping create this kind of content deeper into the funnel. We needed to sharpen our focus. Yes, that's blurry on purpose. Play on words, sharpen our focus. Yeah, it's blurry on purpose. On things like win rates, right? More important than ever to us are win rates. We measure ourselves by that. And we had to realign our resources. So there's me and a couple of the guys that I work with on the team that help the salespeople with these part of our processes. And we need instead to make it, you know, by hook or by crook and working over the weekend to get it done. We realigned our resources and assigned percentages of our time specifically just to this, just to deal enablement. And I think the numbers might surprise you. But there's three of us. I give about 30% of my time, Steve and Doug, 25, 15. So we're about 70% of a full-time equivalent, and we're all 50, 60-hour-a-week workers. And when we hired a new creative director, we asked him for 20% of his time. So all in all, we're giving up more than 40 hours a week out of a 7- and 8-person marketing team to this process. To this process. And then we need to reinforce it. So we have the people aligned, we have the process aligned, we're holding people accountable, we're giving people relief on other things to help execute this process. And then here's a sample panel. I hosted a panel at our sales kickoff going into this fiscal sales year for us, where I brought three salespeople up on the stage and said, do show and tell. Reinforce how important this is. Show us your projects, show us the results, talk about the outcomes to build momentum, remind people of how effective this can be. And we never stop listening. We're still consistently playing a fly on the wall in those meetings to make sure that what we think is happening in the deals is indeed happening in the deals. And you guys, as I said, I've been doing this for 25 years. I started doing this in 1992, the year A Few Good Men came out. A Few Good Men came out. And again, don't tell me if you never heard of that movie. I just don't want to know. But after all this time, I finally came to the realization, my wife's over there, she's going to be surprised when I say this, but I finally can handle the truth. Right? That going it alone isn't as good as going with a team and going with a process. And while we certainly have work to do, we've come farther than I've ever come at any company I've ever worked in, at 6 companies in 25 years. And in preparing for this, I said, well, let me get a screen grab of our shared drive of the deals that we impacted together in 15 months. And I don't know if you, I don't know if you can read it, but it said 71 deals down there in the little bottom of the Windows Explorer. 71 deals in 15 months have been impacted by our team to try to move the needle in this process. And so to recap, and I'm done here, we have how we impacted those 71 deals. We invested in tools and then reinvested when we figured out we didn't have enough of the right tools in the right place. We conducted and continue to conduct comprehensive training. We made an investment in our reach deeper into the funnel. We sharpened our focus on win rates particularly. We realigned and reallocated our resources to take pressure off of us and allow us to thrive in that environment. We implemented and reinforcement programs and processes. And as I mentioned, we kept paying attention. So while I can't name the names, here's the current status of the examples that I showed you. These are live, right? You know, these are active deals engaging right now. I didn't have to dig and go, oh, we did this one 2 years ago. These are all relatively active deals. You can see 2 of the 5 closed in our behavior, in our favor. 3 are still active. And we're down to final 2 in all 3 of those deals. So, you know, guys, I think it's working. We're very proud of what we've done. We have a really strong relationship with the sales team now. It's not awkward. It's not adversarial. They look at us as partners. We collaborate. But perhaps my proudest moment, you guys, despite the improved metrics and the win rates and everything else, about 6 months ago, I got a text from Katie, who was the runner, who's also my toughest critic. Most stubborn, most set in her ways. I really like her. I've known her a long time, but she was tough. This is how I do it, and this is the only way I do it. And I was the top-selling salesperson in the entire organization in 2015. Don't tell me how to do my job, okay? My proudest moment through this whole process was when she sent me this photograph of herself from a hotel room in the city of a client a day ahead of the meeting where the entire team flew in the day before to plan, prepare, practice the session that they were going to deliver the next day, even to the point of printing custom name tents where she took a Sharpie and said, be impressed, Bruno. Look what we're doing here preparing for this meeting. So I guess I can handle the truth, and I'm very optimistic about tomorrow's meeting and the next meeting after that. So I hope I've helped you and give you a few tips on how maybe you can do that for your company too. Thank you very much.